Blog Talk Radio. show is not intended to take the place of orthodox medicine, but to work in conjunction with it. Therefore, if you need to seek medical advice, we advise that you do so. By participating in the Blog Talk Gold Ring Healing Fountain radio show, you are implying that you give permission to receive healing from Source, the Universe, all that is, God, or whatever name you call the Supreme Being, by whichever vibration it comes on. For example, Eastern energies facilitate Reiki, etc. Or Western therapies may utilize the Christ angelic energies. This program is non-denominational, so the healing modality will vary depending on the guest speaker. All healing comes from the same source. It may just come on a different vibration, rather like tuning in to a different radio station. We ask that you join us with an open heart and mind, with a clear head, i.e. not under the influence of drink or recreational drugs.
Everyone who lives on this earth has a mission to do.
All our healers are working from a place of love and light, with the highest good of mankind and Mother Earth uppermost in heart, thought, and deed. Please relax and enjoy this co-creation. This is your time. We are in the time of now.
Angels are standing in line to help me and you. So trust what you feel in your heart and you'll never lose. Awake and let go. Come into the
show. This is Jan Christie speaking to you from the United Kingdom, and it's great to be back here. This is the show which is a worldwide co-creation, and in fact we get guests from all walks of life and people calling in and listening in from all around the world. And right now we're going to send everybody out a great big cosmic kiss. So let's have a group hug. Here we go. Oh, I enjoyed that. I hope you did. Now, our guest today is very appropriate, actually, because it is the Archangel's Feast Day today. And John J. Higgins is an attorney and former stateside prosecutor who's had a multifaceted career and life. And he's going to be speaking about, oddly enough, the history and hierarchy of angels, which I thought was quite an unusual subject for an attorney to be speaking about. But anyway, we're going to bring him on shortly. But as I said, it's a worldwide co-creation, and I think we're going to go over to Oregon to link up with Gary Moore. Are you there, Gary?
Hello, Jen Christie. Hello, everyone. Welcome
Hiya.
To another edition of The Healing Fountain. Hello, hello,
Welcome
hello.
To you, too. Hello, hello. Aloha. So, tell me where you've been. You've been to a powwow this weekend, is that right?
Yes, there was a powwow this weekend just outside of Nashville. I'm over in Nashville now. I'm not in Oregon anymore, by the
oh,
way.
Oh, have you moved again? Oh, wow.
I'm in just outside of Nashville, Tennessee.
I can't keep up with you.
Oh, I've that's actually taken place quite a while ago. So anyway.
Oh, you didn't tell me. Never mind. Okay, never
I'm
mind.
I'm telling you now.
You're here
anyway,
today. That's the main thing.
Right. And yes, there was a native powwow here, and it was a short one. It was only 2 days. Typically, there are 3 days. That was kind of a smaller one, as a little more up close and personal. It was a lovely event. It had a lot of vendors for such a small venue, and it was wonderful. A great time. Powwow is all about, it's a gathering. It's always about song and dance and food, and meeting one another, and perhaps even making new relatives.
Making them.
Oh yeah, with the young ones. The boy meets girl.
With
the natives, the more incidents where boy met girl at powwows than anywhere else, down through history. Sure. So.
Yeah. So do you have a sweat lodge there?
No, not as of yet. We'll be putting one in, I think, eventually. Not as of yet.
That's really interesting. I'd love to have gone. I saw the photographs on Facebook, Gary, and I thought, I looked just behind all the tents of the powwow, and I saw the cars on the car park, and I thought, not that long ago, that would have been all horses, wouldn't it?
Right.
Not cars, all going on the horses. But anyway, yeah, it looks really interesting, and I sort of put my hair in plaits just to celebrate that. But anyway, we are celebrating the Feast of the Angels, the Archangels, today. So, we're going to bring our guest on shortly, but right now I'm going to play a song you requested, and it's a Beatles song, and it's really appropriate as well. This is the one I sing on every Sunday morning. It's called Here Comes the Sun. Beatles, I love it.
Here we go. Love this one.
Me too.
Here comes the sun, I say.
I don't know what happened there. Skype. Okay, then, we always welcome the sun, and we're going to welcome our special guest, JJ Higgins. Are you there, John?
Yes, I am, Jen.
Hiya, how are you?
I'm good today. How are you?
Hello, oh, John. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir.
So, it was a complete surprise that I found out today that it is the Feast of the Archangels. And so, because it's synchronicity, isn't it, at work here, that you're here speaking about angels. Isn't that right?
Uh-huh. Yes,
I didn't know
is.
They feasted.
Oh, well.
Did the
no,
angels
we
feasted
celebrate.
Or the religion's feast?
It's the religion. It's the Catholic religion, I believe. But anyway, yeah, so we've got a bit of wind or something going on there. Have you been eating baked beans? Can you hear it?
I can hear you.
Blowing about. Can you hear the wind? No. That's better. I think we stopped
Much
now.
Much better.
Yes. Thank you. Okay, so you're going to speak to us about it. Now, that is a really unusual topic for an attorney to be speaking about, would you think? But then you're a different sort of guy, aren't you?
Yeah, probably. I wouldn't have spoken about this 5 years ago when I was still prosecuting. So I'll tell you how I got started in all of this.
Yeah, great.
When I was an infant or a toddler, my dad was in the Air Force. He was actually flying DC-3s for the Air Force during the Korean conflict over in England. And he came back to the United States. He was, you know, discharged or whatever. And I remember being in the bedroom with him and my mother. That's where my crib was. And I was seeing angels at night over the doorway. And they seemed to be arguing back and forth. That's the way I remember it. They kept going back and forth. And then my father died in a car accident, and I didn't see them after that. So it kind of meant, you know, it left a mental impression upon me. And then I went off to Polish Catholic school. It was run by people of the Polish descent in a neighboring town. It was just the way the time of my birthday and all of that worked out that I could start, you know, that year. And, of course, it was Polish Catholicism where either they were talking in Polish or in Latin in the Mass. And I had to learn Polish in the first, you know, few grades. But there was always, you know, in Catholicism, there's always all these paintings and drawings and what are of angels. So they kind of fascinated me. And then, you know, my life goes on. I do all kinds of other things. And eventually I become a statewide prosecutor, and I dealt with some of the, I guess, the highest profile cases in my state. I wrote the plea agreement for a serial killer nurse who confessed to murdering 29 people and those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So I was able to retire, and upon retirement, I was very interested in this angel story. I've studied all kinds of history from ancient Rome, you know, Greece, ancient China, Egypt, and this whole story of what happens in the heavens where the angels rebel, I was looking for the original text where it had come from. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking in libraries, I'm looking in bookstores, and I can't find this story anywhere. The only thing that comes close is John Milton's Paradise Lost. Now, I don't know how well you read that. I can read Shakespeare after getting my mind in the right place, but I really had trouble reading Milton. And when I came to the passage where he had the angels using cannons to shoot at one another, I just thought that that was kind of silly at that point. So I went back again, trying to read everything I could, figuring that there would be stuff in Genesis that would give me hints in terms of, you know, where to look, because I knew that the church at different times cleaned up the, you know, religious writings to make them into the Bible. They kept some books, you know, removed others.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read Genesis, it's kind of fascinating because there's really no discussion on when the angels appear at all, or they're formed. So, and any other writings I found didn't really go into that. And then the other thing that fascinated me was the creation stories of mankind, was that in, I think it's Genesis 1:27, it has God created humankind in his image, male and female. And then a couple of, you know, paragraphs later, he goes, then the Lord created man from the dust of the ground, and he goes into the, you know, the story of the birth of Eve. So there's two men, or humankind, creation stories. So I bumped into, there was, I guess, some ancient Hebrew myths that discussed the first woman being born as Lilith and not Eve, which is a fascinating story in itself, in that her and Adam are mates, and she leaves Adam because she gets fed up with him, because not to go with anything graphic, nothing I made up, she wants to have sex in a position that he will not allow her to have sex in. So she gets away from him and goes off with the demons, and the Almighty, that's the way I refer to him in my book, the Almighty sends angels down to kill her, drown her. She's in a lake, ocean, or sea, and she negotiates with the angels that if they don't kill her, she will not destroy or kill any human child under their care, which, again, is a little bit on the bizarre side when you think of it, but that was an interesting, you know, tidbit to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided, since nobody else had written this story, that I was going to go and start writing. And that's how I started writing my novel series, The Archangel Jeremiel and the War to Conquer Heaven. It's actually the first trilogy. There'll be two others. I'm working on The War to Conquer Hell, and the last one will be The War to Conquer Earth. But when you look through the Bible and you try to find the angels' names, there's really, in the Protestant Bibles, there's really only four references to anything angelic, which is either Michael, Gabriel, or Lucifer, or Satan. In the Catholic version, in the Book of Tobit, there's a mention of Raphael, who's the healing angel. And if you look, I don't know, there's a reference to this gentleman called Enoch, and he's either the father or the grandfather of Noah.
The book
of Genesis is interesting because Enoch is like the first scribe, or the first writer, and he has a close connection with the Almighty. But the way the Bible references him at some point, it says, and Enoch walked with God and was no more, which basically meant that he ascended into heaven or was taken. And there's a myth that he then becomes the archangel Metatron. And that comes from a missing book. It had been missing for a couple of thousand years, and it was one of the Bruces, James Bruce, I believe, was a Scotsman, over from your side of the world.
Yeah.
And he discovered the Book of Enoch in Ethiopia. And in Enoch, in the Book of Enoch, he is taken into heaven by the archangel Uriel and shown how the heavens work.
With his body?
Excuse me?
Or is it Moses that ascended with his body? And one of them ascended with his physical body as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, Enoch goes up and comes back. I don't think he stays, because he then writes stuff down. So in that, he mentions a bunch of other angels, and that would be Raguel, Remiel, and Saraquel. The interesting thing in all the angels is that some angels seem to have multiple names. So it's hard to tell whether they're individual angels or they're all one that is being referred to. The other interesting thing about Enoch is that it fills in some of the gap of the Nephilim. If those of you aren't up to speed on that, is that at some point it says the sons of God, you know, found the daughters of men attractive and came down and basically mated with them, and they had offspring, which are known as Nephilim. The Bible says that the Nephilim are the heroes of old and the men of renown. In the Book of Enoch, they are giants that are eating up everything on the earth. And Noah's flood is not to destroy mankind at the time. It is to get rid of these Nephilim that are becoming a problem on the surface of the earth. The other interesting thing is Enoch refers to those sons of God who came down to mate with the women. He calls them the Watchers. And when God decides to destroy the earth, he's also going to cast these watchers into the pit, And they go to Enoch because they know Enoch's got a close relationship with God, so he's probably the first attorney. They send him in to negotiate with the Almighty, and the Almighty goes, nah, they're still going to get punished. And so they got cast down into the pit. So I found all of that extremely interesting. And then when I was looking further in terms of how the whole lore of angels kind of developed over the years, I don't know. I had a connection from a course I had in Roman history. I had the Roman Republic in the first semester, Roman Empire in the second. And I had to write a term paper, full year long. And my premise was that it was bizarre to me that the most Christians were killed or sacrificed during the reign of Marcus Aurelius. He was an emperor, you know, beyond the Julio-Claudians. But he's very much a philosopher and very much of turn the other cheek and very Jesus-like in his teachings. So it just seemed like it was something weird. So I look, and then, of course, the way my brain works, I write the paper the night before. I was still a crammer. And I'm in the library trying to back up my thesis, and I find out that what happened was that the most Christians were killed because the governor in Gaul went nuts, and he was just killing Christians. So it had nothing to do with Marcus Aurelius. But what I did discover was that the early writings about the Christian church were exactly the way we describe devil worshiping today, was that they met at night, right? Because it was the Last Supper, not the last breakfast. And they met in the catacombs, which are the cemeteries. They had what they considered blood sacrifices, because it's drink my blood, eat my body. And they mixed men and women in their religious ceremonies, so they thought they were orgies. The Romans basically did not mix the sexes in their religious practices. So that was kind of weird to me. And then it really locked into me what Rome had to have done to Christianity to create Catholicism eventually. It absorbed Christianity and then started this, you know, melting in with the saints and all of the other kind of gods they had, but they couldn't be on the same level as the Almighty, so they became patron saints and archangels, or angels, not particularly archangels. Now, there's a guy around the 4th century, his name is Pseudo-Dionysius. He's the first one who really starts talking about the heavenly choirs, and he has a hierarchy of, you know, the 9 species of angels split into like 3 groups, group closest to the Almighty, then a group in between, and then a group closer to mankind. And then over the years, those positions of those species of angels kind of switch around, and they move, and they don't stay steady in one position. Certain saints like Michael could be an archangel and a seraphim and a principality. So it got extremely confusing. So when I got to the point of writing my novel, I just made decisions in terms of how I was going to do that hierarchy in a way that would work, in a way that you could tell a story and use the, you know, the angels as the protagonists. So that's kind of how I got to where I was with that. And since I guess I've always had a tendency to like stories, I didn't want to do it as like a history kind of book or whatever, because most people get turned off by that. So I basically made it into a novel by connecting whatever these dots were that I had discovered to make a coherent story. So basically what this story, how the story goes, I'm much kinder to Lilith than the Hebrews were. I actually have a lot of sympathy for her because, you know, she didn't violate any of God's commandments. There was no tree of good and evil at the time. And her going off with, you know, angels or I really don't think the demons existed at that point. So I kind of ignored that. And so it's a love story between Lilith and the 4th archangel named Jeremiel. Now, this is kind of synchronicity. I tried to find a name that nobody else had used because I didn't want a lot of confusion. You know, all this, if you use Michael's got a certain kind of role and all these blessings, and he's a patron saint of the United States and Israel and all of that. And so I thought I came up with this name, Jeremiel. Well, I guess about 6 months later, I bump into it that it's written in other places. And I found as I was doing the work on this book that a lot of the things that I was thinking about or trying to include or whatever, I would turn on the TV or song would come on the radio or I'd go to a bookstore and I'd find whatever it was that I was had been thinking about to kind of help fill in that gap. So,
yeah, that happens to me too. So go
yeah.
on.
And I'm a firm believer in that, and I think the Almighty speaks to us through other people, and through events as they unfold. So, like I say, the story is basically a love story between these two characters, set against the backdrop of what happens in the heavens. Now, I had to wrestle with a couple of other things. If I say to most people, "What are heaven?" Whenever I ask anybody, "Oh, it's a nice place with clouds, everybody's happy, they all sing to the Lord," and blah, blah, blah. And I found that to be particularly uninteresting as an environment for a war. So I went back and I researched more in terms of the heavens, and actually I have the seven heavens. That comes from an ancient Assyrian viewpoint in their religion that there were seven heavens. And I believe the Kabbalah in the Hebrew religion also has things broken into the seven heavens. So I have nine species of angels, and I have seven heavens. So I had to wrestle a little bit further, and I came to the conclusion that the bizarrest angels that were ever described in the Bible were the seraphim and the thrones, what became the seraphim and the thrones. And they have like eyes all through their head and eight wings, or they have a four-faced head that has an eagle head and a human head, and it just got too bizarre for me. So I created these more like not well described so much, but those two kinds of angels or species always travel with the Almighty. And the Almighty, of course, can't be in heaven the whole time, because how would Luciferel, and I use Luciferel because all the angels have an EL at the name, at the end of the name, because it means of God.
He would have been
Luciferel. There would be no point trying to do a revolution against the Almighty, right? I mean, how long would that last? Split second? So
yeah.
I make it so that, you know, the Almighty, he has a throne room in the seventh heaven, and he appears every morning. And he basically gives the angels assignments. And by species, they have certain tasks that they do. And as time goes on, he does not hold the morning ceremony. He allows the Prince of Heaven, Luciferel, he's the one that conducts those meetings in the morning. I also, when I had the Almighty create the angels, Luciferel is directly out of the Almighty's essence. There's no block in terms of it. Whereas everyone else is created by, quote, the Word. They use a word, which, of course, makes humankind different than everything else. So why would not angels? That through the use of the Word, all the other angels are created. So ultimately, there are 14 archangels. There's Luciferel, and then there's Michael, and then there's Samuel, who actually is Satan. I have them as separate creatures. Then Jeremiel is the fourth born, and then there's Gabriel or Beelzebul, because remember, we know about Beelzebub from the Faust story. Gabriel, then Mephistophel, who was also, I think, from Faust, and then Uriel. Then there's Suriel, Mammonel, Raphael, Raziel, and Damiel. And over time, six of the angels basically stick with Luciferel. They start almost worshiping him because he becomes like their leader. And Michael has the other ones, and they eventually split into the rebel angels and the loyal angels. But it's not like they're created to do evil. Luciferel and his crew are really still working off of love, because I really believe love is the basic scheme in the universe. Planets move by attraction. Everything microscopic moves by attraction. It's just that Luciferel's love gets detoured into more of love for his own kind, not for the rest of creation. and hence there's where the split starts to go. Because, you know, I also think that these are thinking beings. They're not, you know, and they're made from God, so God didn't purposely make them to be destructive. He made them out of love, but what he does is he allows everything to have free will, just as a parent would allow a child to go and experiment and do what they do. So that's basically how that kind of starts and moves, you know, throughout the story. The other species of angels, the archangels reside in the seventh heaven. That's the highest of the heavens. And then you have the cherubim, and the cherubim historically are not the little cherubs you get at Valentine's Day, which are known as Pooty. They are sphinx-like. They are warrior angels. Two of them are assigned to guard the gate to the Garden of Eden to keep Adam and Eve out after their fall. So they're in the sixth heaven. The fifth heaven has the virtues, and they're more of the discussion philosophical type angels. They have like a debating cathedral that they work out of. And then the fourth crew are the dominions, and they are basically the supervisors of how the creation gets filled in, because the Almighty, he does broad brushes. Third ones are the principalities. They are basically the engineers, and they do the actual construction. Second level are the potentates, which are like orbs that are filled with energy that the angels can tap into to assist them in things they do. And the first level are the guardian angels. But of course, at this point, they're not really guardian angels because there's not a lot of humans. But that's what they ultimately become. And out of the first heaven, the Garden of Eden is not on the earth. It is in between those two places. So, because I thought it was trying to put it down in the Euphrates Valley, just didn't make a lot of sense to me. So I believe that if they were being cast out, you had to be cast out of something. So that's kind of how that goes. So in terms of the sequencing of the books, in the beginning basically lays a lot of the groundwork. I try to make heaven a very great place. You know, it's beautiful and everyone is happy and, you know, they all work together. And then over time, it's basically the creation of humankind that becomes problematic. And that's where the split begins. And in the beginning, basically ends as Luciferel and what I call his auxilium, which are his followers, are basically discussing that they need to get the Almighty to put things back the way they were, where the angels are really the top tier. Book two then goes into the actual decision to revolt, and it takes place over a number of days, and I won't go into all of the details, but I think I described the war pretty well throughout the seven heavens. They have weaponry that I described. There's a reason for the weaponry. I won't spoil that. And then at the end of that book, you know, Luciferel and the rest of his crew, because it's not only the archangels, there's splits all the way down through the other species, they go with Luciferel. And the third book is in exile. But in exile just doesn't mean Luciferel. It also involves Jeremiel to some degree. And there's reasons for that. And in that book, in some ways, is revenge of Luciferel against Jeremiel. There's things going on with that. So that's kind of the first book. The second series starts with the book In Pursuit, and then the fifth book will be Incognito, and the sixth book will be In Escape. So
how many books have you written thus far?
Four. I'm waiting for the edits on book four.
I see.
So
okay.
Five and six are outlined, but I haven't done all the you know, the filling in yet.
But the four are complete and they're published? Are they published?
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the edits, and book four just hasn't been put out yet.
Okay.
So you have a website. Yeah, we're going to say we need to tell people where they can get a hold of your books when they are all out. So will that be on your website? We'll be able to get them.
Yes, they're all on there. Barnes and Noble. If you put it in John J. Higgins or Archangel or Jeremiel, Jarahmael, it comes up everywhere. But I also have a website, of course. It's www.john-j-higgins.com. There was another John J. Higgins who makes screens over there in Scotland, I think. He beat me to the name. So.
So do you think, you know, to your mind, do you believe that you have channeled the information that you have in your books?
I would like to say that, but I'm never so presumptuous. I've learned that
it's not a total fabrication. It's more of you've been reading all about it, and you know, getting bits of information from here and there and everywhere, and you know, the angels have probably helped you to create the books, and
right.
So
do I think I was guided to go do this? Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had people say to me, because particularly I worked on some of the most notorious murder cases in my state. They're always going, well, why aren't you writing crime? It's like, well, I have these angels in my way. So I've got to get this story out before I can go deal with the other thing, you know?
Yeah. Good. Well, yeah. That's brilliant. And you've had, obviously, a really long journey. Well, I read somewhere that there are 385 direct references to angels in the Bible, but we only tend to think of them at Christmas when we, you know, think about the angels coming down to tell the shepherds that Jesus was born, you know. But
right.
I believe there's 385 direct references to them, but we tend to sort of, they've been largely ignored for generations, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. And when you think just in terms of, you know, stories, I mean, isn't the Luciferel rebellion against the Almighty the ultimate good versus evil story, or the most dramatic?
Yeah,
I've always
said that.
Yeah, and I've said, you know, God creates two kinds of thinking beings. You know, there's humankind who we just can't follow instructions, right? We're eating something we shouldn't be eating or whatever. But these creatures who are closer to him, I mean, they get in their head that they can revolt and kick him out of his own place in heaven, which, I don't know, just fascinates me to no end. And they're creatures of light. They can be anything. They can change form. They can be anywhere. Mm-hmm. Which
sure,
is, you know,
even.
It puts Superman to shame, you know?
Yeah.
So, and any story that I've ever read, anything you read about angels, basically, is you get an angel in modern times that somebody's interacting with. And, yeah, that's fine, but it could be Superman to me, it could be Batman, you know, it could be Hannibal Lecter. I don't really, you know, but no one really tells their story from their perspective. And, you know, they're thinking beings, and I think it, I'm hoping that after somebody reads my books, it's just not telling a story. I had to wrestle with my sense of who the Almighty was and what he did or didn't do. The God in the Bible, especially in the early part, is really schizophrenic. He loves you one minute, and then he kills you the next. And I don't really believe that's the way the Almighty runs. And
I don't.
And so I think there's some other thing going on there that really, you know. So I had to wrestle with that, and I think I've come up with a way that it what's the accounting term for it? Not rectifies, reconciles. It reconciles a lot of these things so that, you know, people will walk away, hopefully, you know, more in awe of the creation rather than less.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really part of my goal. And, you know, I do believe angels are around us, and I do believe that, you know, God communicates to us. We've just got to, you know, keep our minds open.
I believe that as well. And you do too, Gary, don't you? I mean, you have animals as angels in your culture, don't
mm-hmm.
you? Gary's
yes,
a Red Indian. So
according to the native teachings, we didn't have angels. We had the natural, you know, Indians, you know, we lived in the natural world, you know, so
uh-huh.
representatives of the angelic hierarchy, if you will, were of the animal kingdom, the crow, the eagle, the spider. These are all entities, if you will, representing you know, the spiritual side of things, but taking form in the natural world. So there was the correlation of there, you know. So you could pray to the eagle, you could pray to the crow, you could pray to the spider, or listen with your heart and get messages, nuances, and something whispering to your spirit for you to discern and to decide what that message may be. And you know, as with all things spiritual, it's always very symbolic, you know, very symbolic and very personal to the individual. And that's where an intercessor would come in, you know, like a medicine man or a shaman, person like that, to interpret what was going on, the message between the messenger being they weren't called angels, they're called spirit helpers, like a crow,
okay,
or between them and the individual. The go-between would be the intercessor disseminating the information. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
A lot of similarities there. There are a lot of differences if you focus on those, but there are also a lot of similarities through all that. And also the devil. You know, you mentioned the devil, and the Indians always believed that the devil was the invention of the white man, and they can keep him.
You're right, they can.
Yeah, there was no such thing as a devil. There wasn't no such thing as bad medicine or curse. Those were all constructs of the whites, you know, that brought that.
Right.
They didn't have any of that.
So what about voodoo?
Right.
How would you, the Red Indians viewed voodoo?
Voodoo?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. we never dealt with voodoo.
Oh, yeah.
Right. It's more on the islands, right? It's like Jamaica and those other things.
Haiti,
yeah.
Haiti,
yeah.
Dominican Republic down there, yeah.
So I think, you know, what happened historically with a lot of, you know, the religions particularly, they became political structures, you know, where they became kingdoms more so than they became, you know, spiritual. And I think that's how things, you know, got perverted in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. They had a lot of that going on. Mm-hmm. A lot of subdividing.
Methods of control, didn't they, really? Keep us all in line. Frighten us to death.
Yeah.
Hellfire and brimstone. If you don't do this, you'll go to hell.
Yeah, the black robes came and they brought the book and they took the land, you know.
Kind of
way they looked at it, you know.
Well, the whites, I'm embarrassed for what a lot of the whites did in history. You know, it's embarrassing to be a white knowing what your forefathers have done in their ignorance, obviously.
Well,
they're still
all
doing it in their ignorance, aren't they? I say they're still doing it.
Yeah, and it was all done through ignorance. Even, you know, the Indians being victims, they're really no victims. They're only volunteers, and they became victims through their own ignorance. So if there's anything I could tell Indians or white people or anybody, would be at what point do you put it all in the big so what? You know, with the real what being, what are you going to do now? You know, all that's in the past. And if I can say anything to the Indians, and I say this all the time to everyone I can, is forgiveness is a gift we give to ourselves. So
true.
There's a lot to forgive, and just go ahead and do it. Put it all in the big so what. Get off the cross. Stop playing victim. And begin to recreate something better here and now, in the now.
Take back your power.
Real what? Yeah.
Take back your power.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do today to fix it? You know.
Exactly.
That's the only, because, you know, I love like Eckhart Tolle or whatever. I mean, all we ever have is the now.
Right.
So
yes.
You know, all the other stuff is a fleeting thing that either, you know, is may come, because there's no guarantee on that, and the other stuff is, you know, already done. There's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
Water under the bridge, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's
I mean,
in the past where it belongs. Leave it.
That always surprised me was all the hypocrisy and stuff and a lot of the religious writings that, you know, they seem to have lost the message, you know. I mean, Jesus was a person who said you didn't need a rabbi to talk to God. And the next thing you know, within a couple of hundred years, you know, it's the priest is the only one talking to God. And,
yes.
You know, it's like they lost the message, you know, with what they were doing. And, you know, thank God for printing presses and, you know, being able to read the stuff as original sources and not what somebody is telling you, you know.
Right, right.
And, you know, so I've, you know, and I'm hoping
well,
that at some point
people think. Well, the control was still there, wasn't it, at that point? The control was still there at that point.
Oh, very much so.
Because, I
yes.
mean, anybody can speak to their father, can't they? So.
Yes.
We are all extensions of that energy.
Yeah, of course
yes.
we are. But, I mean, then you had to pay money to speak with God via the priests, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So, Leonard Compassion
well, job
is asking
security.
A question in the chat room.
Yeah.
And Leonard Compassion is saying, what is our relationship as humans with angels?
Well, if you want my perspective on that, is it
yes.
I'm kind of more of the mindset of like the Brian Weiss kind of approach, what he describes in Many Lives, Many Masters, where we are reincarnated, and that there are spirit guides, which I think are the angels. I think the first tier of them probably are guardian angels, and I really think that humankind are the guardian angel level that rotates back and forth on they're manifested as humans for that experience. And then after that, then you get to decide, you know, whether you want to go higher in the hierarchy or whatever. For my novel, of course, I make these hierarchies in some kind of tangible, explainable kind of thing. I mean, if I didn't do that, no one would be able to understand anything. So, you know, you're kind of limited by, you know, the base of what people have. But I really think the hierarchy of angels, I'm not convinced that Pseudo-Dionysius has it right. I don't think I have it right. But I do think that there are these spirit guides that are in multiple forms. And as your lives progress, and whatever those angels do, I believe there's other dimensions, that whatever they need to develop their soul or energy or whatever you want to call it, that you know, they become something else. And you know, I when I first heard of reincarnation or whatever, you know, because you're raised Catholic, reincarnation is really not it. You know,
well,
you come down
do,
to earth.
Yeah.
Right. And of course, Jesus is really isn't that the reincarnation story in many ways? It's like the ultimate one.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you come down and you have one shot. You do it right, you go to heaven. You do it wrong, you go to hell. Doesn't matter whether you're born in the ghettos of Calcutta or you're born, you know, as a Rockefeller or a royal, and you're judged the same way, which didn't make any sense to me. So this whole idea that, you know, we come back and then we develop and then, you know, we choose, you know, more experiences. I used to say that, you know, if going to heaven is walking around and just singing to the Lord, I've got a problem because I can't sing. And it does not impress me. And if you have all of eternity, why would you want it all so limited to that? You know? So
well, I think God is the original recycler. I mean, all these same stones, rocks, water is all here since the Big Bang, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Everything is still there since the creation. All the same
yes.
bare products
well,
that were created.
Well, that was the other thing I wrestled with the Almighty a little bit, but I've always had this sense since I was young, was that, you know, I believe that the Almighty was this spirit or presence or whatever you want to call it. I think it got bored. And it was like, I want more than what this is. So that's when all of the Big Bang or all of the creation starts. And if you think of humankind, I mean, what we do here on Earth, and Lord knows where other places, I mean, we really are putting on the television and movies, aren't we? I mean, we're living out you know, an amusement park in many ways. Mm-hmm. We have these experiences or that experiences, and how do you react to that? I've always loved that saying, is that there's been no hero who had an easy life, right? It's always, the heroic creatures are always, or characters are always the one that went through all kinds of ordeals. And so if that makes more sense, and if the Almighty is all, if we're all tied to one another in that energy form, I mean, I think we share all of those experiences, which makes the whole place, the whole universe so much richer to me. It doesn't take away mm-hmm. from it. It builds it tremendously.
Yeah,
so,
we're all extensions of that source energy. And
yes.
We are meant to create. We are here to create.
Yes.
That's our job. You know, we are here to create, to pull out of inertness and chaos action and hold it in its form and call it matter. And we're all
yes.
doing it collectively, individually and collectively, one by one, largely by default. And what's really
yes.
beautiful about this today is that science is even pointing in that direction. Science
Absolutely.
Has begun to acknowledge where spirituality and science came together, where they come together at the quantum levels, and how science
yes.
is already clearly stating, you know, the quantum physics saying that we cannot have a universe without our mind entering into the picture. In fact, our mind is actually shaping the very things we're experiencing,
yes.
and which just blows open the door of creation. You know, we are here to create. We are
yes.
here to infiltrate space with ideas and concepts of thought. And we are
yes.
here to make things out of this life.
And that's
yes.
why it's so important to live our passion. Because it's when we live our passion that we become
right.
in alignment with the reason why we are here. Because we are here for a reason. And we
yes.
choose the reason before we come, I believe. And
yes.
so by living your passion, you put yourself in alignment with that. And
yes.
Make it so much more easy to create and keep positive. But scientists now are even coming to the conclusion that there is more than one dimension, and there's something to do with the gravitational pull. They're saying that there's got to be more than one, four dimensions, in order for the gravitational pull to be so huge.
Well, it would make a lot of sense, and I think that, you know, science a lot of times keeps trying to put limits on it. You know, and
I think
they've got
13 at the last count.
So does religion.
Probably, yeah, yes,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I went to school, the smallest particles were neutrons, protons, and electrons.
Electrons.
I mean, nothing smaller. And then
yeah.
that all went out the window. And
yeah.
then I always crack up in the historical world is that they do this carbon-14 dating all the time, and no matter what date they come with, they're changing it all the time. It's like,
mm-hmm.
it seems to be one of the most unreliable things they've ever had that they've come up with. And I personally believe there was a unifying civilization here that we haven't bumped into yet. Because it makes no sense to me that men are running around hunter-gatherers with a spear and you know, simple traps, and then all of a sudden they're building a pyramid. It's beyond any comprehension I have that you can go from that stage to the other stage without a lot of stuff in between. So
no, I think
whatever
that's due to missing. I think that's due to visits from people from more advanced civilizations than ours, because the alignment of stars has been altered, obviously, over time. But I was reading something about the stars were in this position when the
uh-huh.
pyramid was built to reflect the star situation in the heavens. And obviously, over time, the stars have moved around and changed
yeah.
position. So,
well, in my novels, I have actually the angels building the pyramids. They're a transportation system that's created for Adam and Eve if they ever succeeded and did the right thing. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm always fascinated with all of that. They now think that, at least I've seen some theories, that they think the pyramids were not made as tombs, that they were energy sources using sound. So, I mean, we just don't have all the answers. And they keep saying that man's development, you know, started at 10,000, and then they find, you know, like a city or whatever from 26,000. And,
yes.
you know,
mm-hmm.
so and who knows what the topography of the Earth was. I know that we're now in that, is it Pangaea? I was going to say Panacea, but Pangaea, that all the continents were on just one side of the Earth, and I'm going, oh boy, that would have been one hell of a wobbly rotation. So I'm not convinced that that's all the way that all worked yet either. And I don't think we're supposed to know here. We're supposed to experience whatever this is. And I think the only thing we take with us at the end of our lives is how we treated other people and animals. Because I think animals have souls. People who don't believe that, I don't know. Every animal I've had is, there's something really special and precious in them. And
they're great healers, too.
Yeah. Because everything else here is dust. I mean, we get hung up on gold and silver and all of that other stuff from an almighty perspective. It's it's dust, and you could have a planet that's 99% gold, and gold wouldn't be worth anything on that planet.
Right.
Funny story about that is when they built the Washington Monument in Washington, D.C., that top cone, they made out
aluminum.
Right, because aluminum was a precious metal. And now
we call it aluminium, by the way.
Right.
Oh, right.
Now you can recycle it and make a lot of beer cans.
Exactly.
So. Anyway, it's so interesting, and it just, you know, adds to the theory that there's so much more to this world and to this life than our five or six senses can deduce.
We're way more than we think we are. We're much more human than that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So. And we have to be mindful of that, to acknowledge that we can change. We can change and recreate whatever we can in the moment with a shift of perspective. Change it and making it into something better, happier, creating more joy, you know. We all can do it, and the idea is just to just remain mindful of that and spread that wherever we can, whatever.
Yes.
I went to Krakow last Christmas, and I found that when I got there, it was a complete fluke that I went there, and my daughter just found some cheap flights on the net, and she said, "Do you want to go to Warsaw or Krakow?" And I said, "Krakow, to a Christmas market we were going." So we got there, and I was 30 miles away from Auschwitz. So I said to my daughter, I can't come within 30 miles and not go and visit it. So I went there, and I went round a horrific place. And you know what happened at Auschwitz, everybody does, don't they? And so I got to this one cell, and just as I came round the corner, a load of light hit me. I mean, it was a dreadful place, but the light coming out of this cell was amazing. And then the guide told us that the person who occupied that cell had scratched with his nail into the wood and into the stone the Madonna with the beating heart. And I just thought to myself, whatever you do in the world, if you send light anywhere, somebody feels it, sees it, senses it at some point in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the reason why I went to Krakow, to know that was the truth, you know?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So light and love, to me, are the same thing, love and light, you know?
I think it comes from some of my prosecutorial experience too, is that, you know, evil basically wins or gets away with things in the beginning, but they don't over the long term. And, you know, I think that all of that was, you know, the whole Nazi movement and all the other stuff was that they just overwhelmed for a while, but eventually good does come out and does triumph. And, you know, there were lessons that we had to learn from all of that, and hopefully we've learned them. But, you know, it's a terrible thing to think that, I don't know, I was in the Office of Bias Crime. I guess I was the first lawyer in there. We're the only state in the country that has one. And you really can't, you know, I don't know about, you know about the United States, but, you know, we were having 1,200 bias crimes a year. Mississippi was having four. So it was a reporting problem in many ways. But as part of what I did was that we went on a tour of the Holocaust Museum with one of the with a survivor. And I was like, oh, my God, how can you even go near this again? You know, but, you know, it's like a heroic spirit. And the only objection I had was that there was a complaint in one of the exhibits that Franklin Roosevelt would, they could not convince him to bomb the camps. And I was like, I don't know that if I was in 1943 or 44 and people were telling me this was going on, that I could believe that it was going on because it was so horrific, you know?
Yes.
And, you know, the decision to blow the people, the civilians that would be in there at the same time, I'm sure it was just beyond, you know, a horrible, you know, belief. And I think that's why those soldiers were just so devastated when they, you know, bumped into those camps.
Right.
I don't know how people can do that. I don't know how people can do that, you know. And then you take Stalin. Yeah. Stalin was at least as bad as that. So, you know, you had two people in that section of the world that were, my God, horrific. If there was evil, those guys were there, you know.
Right. Antichrist.
Mm-hmm. At that end of the energy, anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you think of them, they're really frightened little characters. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're really not big, bold men. They were really so screwed up in their head, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it always said to me, even when, you know, you know, when you're a prosecutor, you've got tremendous power. And I don't mean it's stuff that you flaunt, but you can really foul up somebody's life pretty easily by indicting them or whatever. And I took that really very, you know, carefully or cautiously. And, you know, there were times that I had superiors who wanted me to do some stuff that I was like, I can't do that. That's not right. And I've always used the example of being, one of those guards. It was like, fire me, I don't care. You know, I'm not going to contribute to what I think is wrong.
Yeah, it's brilliant that you didn't abuse your power. Brilliant. Because you find so many people abusing their power who are in powerful positions. And there's nothing worse.
Well, I always thought God put me there. Because let me tell you, it was the last thing I wanted to do on the planet was prosecute. So it just kept coming at me and coming at me as, you know, I'd say eventually it came in a neon sign. So, you know, I do believe when the Almighty wants you to do something, he certainly makes it obvious.
Oh, yeah. You know? Absolutely.
Yeah. So.
Well, we have about 20 minutes to go, so we can either ask Patricia Corey to call in the light and do and light the candles, or we can continue with the discussion, whichever you like. I don't mind.
It's up to you, whatever you would like. So,
let's hear from Patricia.
Sorry, what? Gary, what did you say?
Let's hear from Patricia Corley and let John take a break.
We'll invite her to call in the light. We'll come back on in a little while. Okay, then.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Patricia.
Call upon the angel warriors of light, the archangels Michael, Raphael, Gabriel, and Ariel, the ascended masters, the overlighted ones, the Christed extraplanetary and extradimensional beings, the inner plane ascension teams, all the light workers of the universe. Calling all angels, calling all light beings. We ask to be encircled in an impenetrable blanket of pure white light, holding as a barrier against any energies that are not of the highest order, and serving as an ascension field of light emanating directly from Source. Let us be filled with the food of all souls, that the light be anchored within our beings and into the earth, the Great Mother. Let any energies that are not of the highest intention be transmuted or carried away as is appropriate to their evolutionary pace. Let that brilliance permeate every space, filling the heart, streaming through our divine beings. And let us be grateful for all that is perfect in the universe.
Right now, it's time to light our candles. We light our candles to remind us that we are part of the Great Light. It connects us with the Great Light and sets our intention. I'm lighting my candle for peace on earth and for spiritual unity. I've also lit some Nag Champa, which purifies the atmosphere. And I'd like to ask Marika to do the mantra. Thank you, Marika. Dearest Wei Showers, I would like to ask you to take a deep breath and focus on your connection with our Mother Earth. Become aware of the fact that you're in touch with her, your feet lightly touching her, and become aware of the fact that many feet are touching her right now in all countries all over the world. Close your eyes and visualize this with me. We are all standing on her, holding each other's hands. We surround her like a giant wheel with spokes of light coming from our hearts together into the center space that lies deep within our Grandmother Earth. As we see her crystal heart and as we take this deep breath again, we feel the beating of our heart through our bodies, and we all start to slightly move on the melody of her heartbeat as one heart. We feel this energy reaching our heart centers, and our hearts feel so warm, they're overflowing with love, and the energy you can imagine as the purest light flows to the center of the earth. And we become aware of our connection again. and we know we are all related. Mitakoye Oyasin. When the energy reaches our eyes, we feel our heads lifting a tiny bit up, and we see our Father Sky. And when we see beyond Father Sky, we see a giant book floating in space. On the cover of the book is written, Book of Healing Requests, and the book opens. We can write down all names we would like in that book, but the first name you may write down in grace is your own name. Please go ahead and write it in there. Right now, you are a receiver of healing energy, and you may direct this energy to any human being, animal or plant you want by writing down the names in the book. You may write them down underneath the healing fountain list that is already in there. I'll give you a little bit of time to write the names down. Please go ahead now. And when all names are written in the book, we see that the book closes and drops slightly down into the center of Mother Earth. Thank you, Mother Earth, for all the love that you give. Feel the gratitude and sit down very comfortable and be surrounded by this energy. And listen to a beautiful meditation from our special guest. Thank you very much. Right, now I'd like you to take 4 deep breaths. Connecting with your heart center as you do so. Breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth, or whatever is comfortable for you. Feel your legs becoming heavier. Open your chakras. And I'd like to take you to meet your guardian angel. Open the curtain or veil between this world and the spirit world and feel the energy becoming lighter and higher. In front of you, you see a golden elevator cage. Step into the cage. See the gatekeeper. He's going to lock the gate to keep you safe. And the elevator rises. Feel the energy becoming higher and higher. The cage stops. The gatekeeper opens the door opposite to where you entered. And as you look down, you see a very solid path before you. Look back and smile at the gatekeeper. He'll be waiting to take you back home. And as you start on the path, look around you to see what your environment looks like. Are you inside or outside? Remembering to breathe as you walk towards your sacred space. It is being presented to you in the angelic realm to let you know you are safe and secure and on the right path. Look around your sacred space. What does it look like? You can feel the divine love of the Creator as it starts to flow through your veins. Really recognizing as you breathe that God is in this space. Breathe in and exhale, dropping into your heart, feeling the love. Become aware that from the ethers in front of you steps your angel. You may be alone, you may be with others. Just be open to whoever comes to you. And now your beautiful guardian angel steps up to you. Smile. Embrace. Take a deep breath in recognizing your soul's energy. What does it feel like in your aura? Can you hear anything? What do you see? You may ask your angel's name. Breathe in. Exhale. You may ask at this time if your angel has anything to give you. Is there an object or a gift? If they do give you something, take a moment to examine it. Is it a color? An idea? An object? There is no wrong here. Make a mental note to take it back with you to remember what it is like. You may ask your angel a question or if they have a message for you. Take a deep breath in. Exhale. You may ask your angel to come back with you, but you know that they are always with you. Give your angel a hug. The angel steps back into the ether. You can come back to this sacred space anytime you wish. Thank your angel and your creator for all he or she does. Step back onto the solid path, back to the golden cage, holding your gift. Your gatekeeper smiles lovingly at you, latching the gate securely behind you. He gives you a hug, happy and proud of what you have achieved today. He flicks the switch and you hear the hum as the elevator begins to lower. Feel the energies becoming denser. And as you reach the bottom, the gatekeeper opens the gate and you step back out. You thank the gatekeeper. You come back into your body. You're back down to earth. Wriggle your fingers and toes and be aware of everything that is around you. Thank you. Thank you. We want to thank our special guest, J.J. Higgins. Are you there, John? We'll bring him back on to tell us about his website. That was a beautiful talk about the angels. Are you there, John?
I'm here. All right, do you want my website?
Yes, please.
The easiest one is www.john-j-higgins.com. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter. Twitter's at John J. Higgins ESQ. I also have this radio show I've been doing, and you can find the links to that at www.hangingwithhiggins.com. So you'll find me in one of those.
Are you on Blog Talk Radio?
No, it was a paranormal crew that asked me to do a show for them. At first, I didn't want to do it, but I'd rather do that than do a blog.
Great.
So I try to get people that I found interesting, so it's a real mixed mash of people. So.
Yeah, well, that's like ours, isn't it, Gary? And
absolutely.
We hope to have you back on again soon, John. If you want to come
back
on
the
show. Yeah, that would be brilliant.
And, yes, thank you so much.
Thank you to the people in the chat room. It's a worldwide co-creation, as I said, and everyone who tunes into or gets in the chat room helps to co-create the energies. And thank you, Gary, for being with us. It's great to
thank
see you
again. Thank you, Christy.
And we're going to play out with Pink Floyd, The Dark Side, because it's a special request by John. So thank you once more, John, and we'll give you another date for about 3 months. Is that okay?
That'd be wonderful.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed
it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Goodbye and God bless everyone. And before we go, how about a cosmic kiss?
Yeah, 30 seconds.
There you go. Goodbye and God bless everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Bye. Come on, Pink Floyd.
Balance on the biggest wave, race to one.